Welcome to another episode of Data for Future and Happy New Year. Do you know that transportation, how much transportation is accounting for the greenhouse emission in Europe? It's about almost a quarter. As we know, urban mobility is something we cannot ignore when we're thinking about sustainable smart cities of the future. Well, we're imagining ways of optimizing our transportation systems. We first need to be able to track and measure how do people really move in the city on a day-to-day basis. And MotionTag is the company that measures in real time, in detail, how individuals travel around cities, regardless of how many modes of transportation they use. So with many curiosity and questions in mind, today I'm happy to invite Fabien Sauthier to the show, who is the COO at MotionTag. Welcome to the show, Fabien.
Hi, Tammy. Thanks a lot for having me for the show. It's really a pleasure to be there and to talk about this topic, which we're really keen to bring more awareness to it. And I think a lot of people are very keen to improve on their CO2 footprints. So yeah, hopefully I can provide some more answers to how do we do this and how do we measure this.
Perfect, me myself included. I'm very curious about what aspects that we can help to make a change. So Fabien, you've been in MotionTag since 2016 and you're working on the operational side. Now you're leading a team of 22 people at outskirts of Berlin. And as I understand, your job is to meet and collaborate with smart city stakeholders to promote your service MotionTag, which promotes seamless, sustainable, and intelligent mobility system. So tell us more about it. Explain with more examples, what exactly does MotionTag do?
Yeah, sure. As you said, I've been in the company since almost its beginning. The company started in 2015, late 2015. So I was one of the first employees. So it was really a great adventure to be in. What we provide actually, and sort of our mission behind MotionTag, is that today what we see is lacking is the fact that governmental institutions, public transport operators, city planners basically don't really have a very good understanding in granular data about how people are moving. And therefore, improving the infrastructure is relatively tough because the data that they get is usually quite old. It dates usually from surveys that are being done every 3-5 years, maybe even more sometimes. And with that, they get origin destination matrices, for example, understanding how many people go from here to here, on what frequency, how do they do that with a mode of transport. But it's, as you can imagine, it's if you don't get it really updated very often, and especially with changes that happen in our day-to-day life, it's pretty tough to make some informed decisions about how to improve our transportation network, for example. Where do we add, on-demand rides and replace maybe buses that are fixed, improve a lot of like basically improve all the system at once. That is one thing that we really want to tackle is this aspect, because we think that with this, there's going to be a lot of like changes that happen with people's mobility behaviors. If the infrastructure changes, there's going to be more people using their bikes. There's going to be more people using, for example, public transportation, if you don't need to, walk for so long to the to the bus station. So all these things together are really important as a infrastructure improvement. And on the other side, what I think is really important is that there is a lack today of motivation, of incentive on the individual to change one's mobility. That, if we don't tackle that at the beginning, we don't kind of get those grassroots movements that can help steer policy. We know that actually, politics are hearing what's going on, what people are thinking and so on. And our role is also to stimulate people to kind of change their mobility behaviors, understand the impact of it, and provide incentives for doing that, because kind of having this initial nudge, this kind of short-term benefit of doing that is important, I think, so that we kind of get changes now and not in 5 years. And those things together, we think, are kind of the approach that we should bring to cities, to governments, to regions, so that they can bring that motivation to people to change, and also at the same time better understand how the infrastructure is being used today, so that they can improve the infrastructure for the other parts of people that are maybe not as motivated, but will get motivated if, for example, buses come more often, there's better infrastructure that's safer for bikes, things like that, that we think are gonna really make a big difference in the long term and decrease that CO2 balance that we have now that's really way too high because the system is just not optimized enough. So we provide that, basically those two aspects, one really being a bit, we have a technology that runs on the phone of a user, that understands all the different modes of transportation that people are using through quite a lot of machine learning that's being done to understand how, when, why people are traveling. And the big question there is like, okay, great, you can kind of get that information from a smartphone, but why would a user, you know, want to be tracked? And that's where the whole CO2 incentive aspect is kicks in. And we get a lot of like positive feedback from that. So happy to tell you more about it afterwards, but that's really one big part of what motivates everyone at MotionTag to really work on providing better data for this reason.
Sounds great. So as I understand, there are two big parts. One on the infrastructure side, how do we integrate the info, track and understand better what people are doing? And on the other side is the incentive behavior nudge. Let's start with the first one, because as we are understanding now, the current transportation system, some are revolutionizing, they are collecting better and more information. But there is this problem, because if you're the infrastructure with the metro station, you have all the data of the metro station. On the other side, if you run the bus route, you have all the information about the bus. The integration between different sectors, different means of transport, is very difficult for them to collaborate and break the data silos. So how does MotionTag work in this sense? How do you interpret your data to put all this information together?
Yeah. It's a great question, because that's really a big challenge in today's industry, because the interoperability between those systems is really a key. More and more is done so that, you know, you kind of get like a smart card or, you know, your phone to kind of go inside big cities, at least, to kind of get from one mode to another, being able to shift modes quite easily. But that is still within public transportation. And what we know is a key as well, is also the fact that we want to bring people to mass transit in an easier way. This first and last mile topic is one that I think is really crucial to determine whether or not a person is going to take public transport or not. For us, it's clear that mass transit is there to remain, and that needs actually more technology to help people get to it. And so what we provide there, which I think is really important, because it's about leveraging open data, open source data. So what we do on the technology side there is that we transfer sensor data that we're collecting from the smartphone into routes. And those routes are then map matched to a certain extent on infrastructure. Through stations, for example, that we can understand. And we can then, of course, what we will do on top of that, which I think is really important, is use GTFS data, for example. So open source, again, timetable data to completely understand the routes, the different modes of transportation, but also the different lines of transportation that people have taken, so that we can come up with very clear indicators for companies that have basically perhaps a knowledge of how many people have been at this station at a moment X, but do not know how the people have come, which lines they've switched to, where did they actually originate from. And that complete travel chain is really important, especially in public transport planning, where our solution is being used. And I think that's really an important aspect of how you can leverage crowdsourced data with open source data as well to bring really a very deep knowledge about people's customer, like their travel journeys, leveraging what's already out there. We're not saying, you know, let's install new sensors in place, let's try to gather more information. The information is already there. It's, you know, your accelerometer in your smartphone is actually always on. Why not use it for a better reason than just for understanding, for example, for different things that the accelerator is used. So I think that's what we're trying to really get to, is cut off on you know, investment into more hardware. I just use what's already out there so that we can provide a good data base for decision makers. One more aspect that I think I'd like to tackle on that side, on public transportation. There is one big thing that we see, at least in open systems. So open systems are ones that do not have gates that you have to pass through and like check in, check out, things like that, which is very much the case in the German speaking part of Europe, for example, but also in smaller locations, smaller cities. And that is how you actually, with a system that you have sort of a single price for using public transportation, and you can use different operators. Some operate buses, some operate metros, some operate long distance trains that you can still use between different parts of the city. How do you distribute this €1, for example, you're collecting to the different operators? It's a huge topic. And is one where we provide a very good solution for, as we can track all that information and the lines and the operators that are behind this. And that's been very helpful in one of the projects that we've closed last year, which we're really proud of. It's called Klimaticket. It's in Austria. It's a really huge initiative from the government, actually, to provide a very cheap subscription to public transportation in whole Austria. It's a bit less than, or it's about €1,000, I think, for the whole year, and you can go wherever you want in Austria. With that, of course, comes the question of, okay, how do I split that €1,000 between all those different operators in this, you know, huge country? I mean, it's not a huge country, but it's still quite big. And that's where our data comes into place. So we have a panel of users that are ticket holders that are providing data, and we're then actually splitting that between those different operators. So it's really interesting, because we're really getting to use cases that are crucial for public transportation. And with that, we can support initiatives such as this one, in saying, look, the risk of you getting less or more is going to be very small, because we're going to be collecting very, very precisely how people are going to use that ticket. And if a person takes your train, you'll get that money. So it's important to reduce those barriers to innovation, to sustainable innovation. And that's what we've done in Austria. And I think that's, it's a really great project. We're really proud of.
That's awesome. So I'm curious, you're talking about the use case where users transport from a bus to a metro, then potentially ride a bike, or if they're in the port, they take a boat. How can you actually tag those information with the data you collect?
Yeah, so that's kind of coming back to a bit of our IP. So I'll try to be as like over, I give you as much information as possible. So there's different kind of layers, and it's a pipeline that we have on our side, mostly running in the back end. So there's some sensor processing happening on the phone, because the data that we're collecting is massive. From an accelerometer perspective, you know, it's passive data, but it's basically generated all the time. So we're going to be using most of the data that's already there in your smartphone, GPS included, of course. We have algorithms that will wake up, go to sleep whenever you're moving or not moving, so that we spare your battery, because that's really important as well. You don't want to have a phone that's completely drained from that. And what we'll do afterwards is basically, in our pipeline, look at, okay, what are the kind of modes we're distinguishing from the sensor data and the GPS? So that's one aspect. And then we can kind of elaborate more on that and understanding, for example, what mode of transport, if it's one that we detect as a rail one, is it going to be that type of rail or not, like a suburban rail or a metro or tram, with infrastructure data, as I said. So that's like where OSM data comes into place. So it's a good thing about the data that we're, or the solution that we have, is that it can actually run everywhere in the world. We don't have, you know, any limits to implementing it, for example, in, I don't know, South America or in Asia or anywhere. And with that, we can then really make a distinction between 10 modes of transportation completely automatically without having users that correct or anything, that input anything. And with that information, we can then go one step further in understanding, for example, if you took a bus, what line was it? Because we can get station to station. We can kind of query that, if you will. We have our own algorithms to understand based on GTFS data, what was it? And maybe one more thing that's interesting as well, especially we're not really caring too much if you're going to McDonald's or whatever. It's not interesting for us. We're a mobility company that is focused on mobility and not really on like marketing aspects. But it is interesting to understand what's the purpose of a trip. Are you going there for work? Are you going there for coming back home? Are you going for leisure, for shopping? These are really important aspects because they help, for example, simulation modeling software. There's like kind of a new thing happening on that side, which is agent-based modeling, that needs that type of information, because it kind of dictates, okay, if you have X amount of people you know, traveling in the city, they're all independent, they're all individuals that have certain needs. So you kind of need to give that person a persona, if you will, and that will help build better simulation that will help then improve the type of infrastructure or services in mobility that this person needs, because you might have different needs if you're going to go shopping than if you need to bring your kid to school or other stuff like that. So all that information that we can collect on top, which kind of gives also an idea of a purpose, is something that we're also, we've just really released our first, you know, good level product on that side last year. And we're really keen to also develop that more, because it's, yeah, it's getting more and more important as well, so that we can use, that's also using open data. And I think that's crucial when building a product, that you're using a lot of that stuff without being dependent on, for example, whatever Google Maps, Google Places API can provide, which is pretty expensive. And from a privacy topic, we're in Europe, is also tough to use. So we find good ways of dealing with that with open source. So it's great to have a community of people that are active and help build products like ours, basically.
That's awesome. So if I understand correctly, by identifying the goal, the purpose of the trip, you actually have some user input.
Not really, actually. It's all done in the background. Yeah. So it's really based on where a person has gone, finished the trip, and at what time of the day, how much time this person has spent there. That data gets usually then, of course, anonymized, aggregated when we come up to insights, because what is interesting for a public transport operator is not knowing what you're doing, but knowing people in that area that live around there have those mobility needs. So we use that that data that's collected afterwards for that reason, but it's all automatically detected, actually.
Okay, fair enough. And as you're mentioning about privacy, that's definitely something that struck me the most, because we're talking a lot about very detailed level of data. You're identifying a person, the means of transport, their moving behavior, where do they go, what their hobby are even. How do you deal with the privacy concerns of people, and how do you guard it once they trust you to give you the information?
Yeah, that's a great question. So about getting the opt-in. So it's all about opt-ins at this point. GDPR is there to make sure that you get an opt-in from a user and you're not actually getting data without the consent. So that's very, very important. So that's really the main topic here is to get that consent. And to get that consent, it's like you have to think a bit about your usage of digital products generally. We all use perhaps Google Maps or Google Mail or a lot of other things that we know take quite a lot of data from us for a certain reason. You understand the purpose, you understand that actually this is helping you in some way. So we take a similar approach where for us, you as an individual want to know certain things. Of course, more data privacy aspect is what's the purpose of the data being collected? Where is it going to be stored? You know, can I know a bit more about all those privacy aspects that are part of usually contractual topics? And the other one is much more on what do I get from this, like a user service? And there, our answer for now, at least, is really to say, look, we know CO2 carbon emissions is really something that interests a lot of people. We want to help them make better informed decisions about their choices when it comes to mobility. And it's a great use of our technology. So if you don't need to do anything, and that's the thing, because you can be, you know, you can declare more or less what you're doing on a daily basis, and then we can tell you what you're doing then on a monthly basis or whatever. It's not the purpose. The purpose is to make this as simple as possible for people to get involved and to get something from it. And so that's really about how we get the opt-in, the people to be engaged. And on that side, I think coming back to this product about incentives and CO2, I'm really proud of a project that we've had now it's been almost a year and a half with the Deutsche Bahn, the German Rail in the city of Münster, where we launched a product together called Münster Bewegt. Still in the app stores if people are interested to download it and check it out, where people get, for example, rewards and basically a token every time they don't use a car, and they can exchange that token with rewards. They get more information about you know, their CO2 footprint, their splits between the different modes of transport. There's competitions as well, so you know, you can kind of you know, cheer for your neighborhood, for example, things like that. And we think this is a really good example of like how to get people involved, because we got about 1% of the population to download the app within 3 months. We got a really strong retention on that. We got about more than 65% of people that were, after a month of downloading, still active, which is extremely high for a digital product. So we see that the people are really engaged on that topic and want to participate and want to be active on this. So we think this is a good approach to getting consent, to get something for people. And our promise towards them is that the data, once it's, now to answer your second part of the question, once the data is stored, we're going to be using it for the purposes that is inside the privacy policy, which you can always have a look at. And will be around how do we improve mobility in your region, and it's going to be environment and things that we care about that we think you care about as well, and it's going to be very clearly stated that your data is never going to be sold as basically an individual. We don't care about you. We don't even need your, you know, name or email address. You can just download the app. It's not our business is not that. If you want to have that data, and that's the most important part of GDPR, is that you are controlling your data. So if you want it back, if you want to know more about our processes and you want to inquire about it, you can. And we'll give you all the extent of data that we have on you. And if you want it to be erased, we will erase it, and it's not a problem. And I think that's, I like GDPR for that, because I am myself a consumer, and I think it's important that not every weather app out there or whatever app out there gets my data for no reason, has that, you know. And I think the OSs are doing that as well, like Apple, Android are making it harder for a good reason, is that I think in the past couple of years, there's been yeah, it's been going a bit all over the place, and people need to have better control over their data, and I think that's normal. So, you know, we know it makes our work difficult, but it's all in the interest of consumers, and I think that's really important.
Totally, and I love to hear that the cases where you do different projects with different governments or entities. That brings my question, who are really your end customers? Who are you selling this to? I know you have an app, but according to what I learned about Motion Tech, you can also integrate into other apps to function. How does it work?
Yeah, so we have like three main types of clients today. One are public transport companies, and could be from really national rail, so you know, your big company, to public transport operators from smaller areas. But we mostly work with larger companies today. And in that regards, it's really more about the insights about how people are moving. So knowing generally how people are moving in the country. If they want to try new things, new initiatives to stimulate people to use public transportation more, like I said, in Austria, for example, our tool comes really in handy for this. And it's kind of our Motion Tag app that we have in the store under Motion Tag is kind of what we provide as a white label solution for panels of users that they have. And that's one big, say, chunk of customers that we have. They run like different projects usually as well with our technology, like in Switzerland. We've been working with the Swiss Federal Railway there, the national transport operator there since end of 2016, beginning of 2017. So they're really a long lasting customer of ours. Really happy to have them because they've helped since day one, kind of. There, for example, our product was also used in mobility as a service product that they had, which is called SBB Green Class. So it's kind of, how does, you know, your mobility get influenced when you have everything in your hands? You have like a car in leasing, for example. It was electric in that sense. It was quite early, a BMW i3. You had like a national subscription for all trains in Switzerland. You had park and rail, so you know, you can just park your car at a train station and then take the train, and that was included. There were car sharing as well. So all that together, like, how is this influencing people's behaviors? Are people going to use public transportation more? That's kind of like a big, you know, assumption that needs to be validated for people that are operating such infrastructure, is that when there is new competition, perhaps, or new innovation, will I actually benefit from this? Will the environment benefit from this? So we were able to answer all those questions. And luckily, it actually proved the case of mobility as a service. I don't know how it would look like if it would not be the case. How would that be perceived? But ultimately, it was great to see that, like, overall CO2 consumption was reduced in comparison to when people didn't have that subscription model. There were also the fact that people were using more public transportation than before. So combine more modes of transport together. So a lot of things kind of went into, okay, you know, we're validating that, we're understanding how, you know, mobility will shift in the next 10 years. So does it make sense for us to invest in this as a company? So these are things that we can help answer, for example, on big transport operators that have those plans in their strategy. The second one would be transportation consultants. So we work with, these are kind of intermediaries between then this end client that could be a national like institution, a government. We work with governments in Switzerland and in Germany on, for example, understanding the impact of COVID on people's mobility behaviors. So you've all probably seen some graphs at some point about, you know, people stopping to use public transport by 80% sometimes and things like that. So we've provided that on a national level in both Switzerland and Germany. So working with the governments there through transportation consultants usually. So they do a lot of also some work after the data has been created. Some parts are done by us, some are done by the consultants. They have more know-how about what the client is really interested in some ways. And ultimately, the third type of client that we have is on the sustainability aspect, so sustainable mobility. There we work with all the ranges of different people that are in that topic. It could be a super small startup from Potsdam, around Berlin, from two national carriers like Swisscom in Switzerland that have initiatives around CO2. And there they will most likely, they integrate our software development kits. We have an SDK, so we can integrate that inside an existing application and make use of that data for understanding, for example, the CO2 footprint of a user. So there in Switzerland, a good example there is the work we've done with Swisscom. It's really a great product. It's entering its now third year. It's called the Swiss Climate Challenge. And it's now actually targeted a bit more to companies that want to improve their CO2 footprint of their employees. So there comes also gamification, comes rewarding as well. So if you reduce your CO2 footprint, you'll get access to some rewards. And there we've also, for example, collaborated with the Biking Association of Switzerland that's launching, for example, every year or every 6 months initiatives where municipalities, for example, want to stimulate people to use their bikes more often. So, you know, they're trying to like steer some movements in that sense and like get people to bike. Usually happens in September. They're using, for example, our product with Swisscom to accompany that that initiative. And the data is then being used, for example, for improving bike infrastructure in those municipalities. So it's really great to see that like through even our partners, there's two components, one being really the user and stimulating people to change. And then on the infrastructure, these things really couple each other very well and actually are super demanded by also those municipalities that want to basically get a better understanding of how they can improve bike situations in their municipalities. So yeah, that's the type of work we do.
Some good examples. So it seems that your company really benefiting the economy of scale. The more information you extract, the better insight you can offer to the entities. But once you get that data, in the case you're working with a partner or within your app, who is the ultimate owner of the information? Do your partners have the ownership of the data? They can manipulate and extract information, or you're the one guarding it, or consumer are the ultimate owner?
The latter is always, the consumer is always the owner of the data ultimately. That's the answer behind this. The one on the business side is usually that we share, we control both the data. So we have a joint controllership agreement. That is usually what we do so that we can run our own analysis and the client can do the same. And at this point, it's very collaborative usually. People are very happy to kind of see what we can do, make use of what we already have. If they want some stuff that is a bit more detailed and is something that we at that point aren't perhaps not particularly keen to develop more, then, you know, happy for them to do it themselves. So it's very collaborative. And I think our clients really enjoy that so that we have, you know, open communication with our developers as well and their developers. And we can then, you know, look at that from those two angles.
Okay. And data being such an important part of your business, how important, what's the strategic position of the data team in your company? How many people are there and what's the next step for it to grow?
Yeah, super important. I have to say that at the beginning of our journey, a lot of our clients were really big and were expecting basically us to take care of the data collection. The data analysis was usually something that they like to do on their side because they had a team of data scientists, data analysts on their side. And so it kind of shifted in priority. For us, it's becoming much more important. So today we have two data analysts, we have two data scientists slash machine learning engineers, and one PO that's really looking at, okay, the analytics portfolio, what we can do with the data afterwards, is today's team. Out of 22, it is quite significant, I would say. Of course, you know, people in back end or in front end, they're all part of like the product as is, but I think really on the data side, it's kind of looking at it from the two perspectives, data entrance, data getting out. And in the middle, there's a lot of stuff coming and a lot of different competences. So I would say like in the past, the data analysts part of our company, looking at what we can do in terms of visualization of the data, better export capabilities and integration within other systems is something that was not so important, but we want as a strategic view on this, we want to develop that more. So actually our team on the data analyst side, the three people there just started two people started this last year in summer. So it's a relatively new, say, phase of our company. And for us, you know, if we look at, ahead at how we want to build our company and see it in the next 5 years, for example, is we want to have basically much more of an analytical capabilities where we have a sort of a platform, an insights platform, which helps a lot on the decision making, on providing that data very easily for decision makers. If they want more, you know, data exports or just visualization, these are things that we could do on both sides. But basically, our idea is that we have multiple sources of data coming from different apps that come into a data lake, and that lake being used then for the insights on providing that more as a, yeah, as an easier way to get that, even if you don't have an app, you know, that's the point. We wanna get to people that want to just have the insights without having the trouble of collecting the data. And knowing on our side that the data is of extremely good quality because we can actually monitor what's coming inside the lake with our knowledge of you know, how the data is being collected. So it's really important, I think, if we want to provide a good quality product, that we have that control. So that's why we want to focus on that in the future.
Absolutely. Then what about on the user side? Like you're talking about different behavior nudge for consumers to live a more sustainable lifestyle, you know, like travel more with public transportation. How are you also optimizing on that and collecting information on those? Have you ever tracked, because of this effort, how many CO2 emission have you avoided? Any sizable impact there?
Yeah, so we are constantly measuring that. There's different ways of doing that. One is really to just check, okay, from the start of that initiative that we've launched, how much of basically trips have been collected or understood as not being by car? How is this shifting with the different initiatives that we've launched? So we, of course, measure that. And we can also then measure that in comparison to a control group. So either we have national statistics or urban sort of city statistics about how people are generally moving, and we can compare that too. Or we, in some cases, have really two groups, one control group, one experimental group. And then we can compare that very very easily. We've done that really recently with the Swiss Federal Railway again. They launched a product with another company called Traffi, who's doing a lot of mass platforms out there here in Berlin, for example. We've looked at, for example, you know, when launching a subscription model for public transportation and kick scooter and other aspects, how is this impacting, for example, people's walks, people's use of their private bikes, the use of public transportation, and seeing how that is influenced and so on. So these are really things that we're measuring tool at the end. So we need to kind of, it's a great fact that we can provide that. So it's still not published, those results about Switzerland. So hopefully that happens in the next couple of months. There I can say, at least on the initiatives that we had, for example, in sustainability, the results are really great in regards to seeing model shifts happening. We have, for example, an increase, I think, of about 60 to 70% of use of public transportation in some areas, which is really a lot. Wow. It's important to see that these are things that we can communicate because we can measure that. And that might happen in some parts of the year because a special initiatives was launched, for example, the biking one. But you can see that as being perhaps a permanent change when you see like what happened during Corona with people using their bikes much more often and seeing like what everyone's talking about, city of Paris being, you know, so increasing number of bikers and so on. I think there's definitely a lot to do with making that change once and making it sure that it's going to repeat. So even if it happens maybe once a month, a year in a month, what's important is that it sticks and that we're able to measure if it sticks or not. And I think that's why our tool is used a lot in this context. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, after your successful projects in mainly Germany and Switzerland, what are the next steps? It seems that it's such a good solution. What are your challenges when you're expanding your impact across borders and to grow your company?
Yeah, so I mean, for us, it's about, as you mentioned, scaling, a really important topic, especially as a startup. I'd say now we have our word quite, the word is out when it comes to that in German speaking area. Still, I think there's a lot of room. We've seen, like, we've launched this application that was in Münster. We've launched this in four other cities in Germany last year. So it's definitely scaling there. This year already, there are about 3 tenders that are out on that side that we're answering. So we see there's a lot of there's more and more momentum happening in our core market. So we're still going to focus quite a lot of our attention here because we're a small company at this point. But what I see going forward is really bringing partnerships in international markets. So working with local champions, that's kind of how we call them, people that have a good network, companies that are respected in their area, and have the ability of bringing many users. You talked about before the fact that, like, you know, the more users we have, the more value we can provide in terms of insights. And that's clearly the case. So we are basically now really talking to many international partners, local champions, like national champions, so that we can implement that solution with them. And for them, you know, they're quite convinced about, you know, the utility of it. It's now really about preaching and sort of saying, hey, this is out there. You can even test it. You know, the app's super easy to use and so on. Like, and it's about spreading that because we see that usually it takes about a year because sales cycles are rather long to get from this awareness stage to a full contract that is, you know, representative in terms of revenues as well for us. And I think that's what's challenging, is those sales cycles are very long. And that's why we need to build that with people that have the good connections so that we can try to minimize that as fast as much as possible.
Wow, yeah, definitely. If you think about it, the partnership is with the very kind of traditional public sector, no? And unavoidably, it takes longer, but hopefully the acceleration will happen soon. So thinking down this line in 5 years, where do you think MotionTech will be?
Yeah, for us, what's really important is our on the analytics side of our business. I think we want to be the reference when it comes to location data, insights on people's traveling behaviors, especially in Europe within five years. We have already some first customers across the Atlantic, for example. So things are scaling towards, you know, hopefully being out of Europe in those 5 years. But we want to focus our energy here because also governments are going in that direction and rather fast here. There is even, I think, a national law coming into place, for example, in the Netherlands next year, where they're forcing employers to reduce their CO2 footprint from their employees. And they'll have to report on that. So you see more and more initiatives coming in where, you know, companies will need to have those things stored inside their business. It's going to have to be there. And on the other side, we want to be this platform which will help them, but will also help other players, such as a city that where this big employer is, to better provide the right infrastructure and services. And for us, we want to reach the masses, and we think that the infrastructure is the most important part. So our role is going to be in that. And it basically, you can think of us as, yeah, you're answering basically tool for all questions related to mobility. You can come to us with much more greater precision than what is out there today. Because, you know, today there are, for example, telco providers that provide some data about how people that have mobile phones move around, but it's very imprecise at this point. And we think that the quality of the data needs to be really, really high so that we can get to a better future in those areas. So I would like to see us being really, really very, very present in Europe with a strong footprint here. And that the word spreads across the world about what's possible when you think about this challenge in a way that you can sort of think about it without having to invest all in electric cars or in other things that have a high today's sort of governments are really aware of that more because there's strong national interests behind it. But I think everyone wants to be part of the solution, and why not embrace that? But I think that's a better way of thinking about this challenge that we have than trying to sell more electric cars, which I hope it will help. I think it will help. But I think we can think about different solutions.
Totally. And I think it's a great place where you're taking advantage of the mass data at a sort of early stage. I know like you said, the telecoms, they're already taking advantage of the information a lot. But in the end, as the end consumer being more aware, they realize they are not really licensing out their information to be used for various purposes. But in the name of sustainability for a better cause, it's definitely more sustainable and there is a better growth path. So I like the ambition and the hope we do see the change happening in the near 5 years. So thank you very much, Fabian, for the introduction. I don't know if there is anything we missed in the conversation that you'd like to add.
No, I think, all questions were really great. Really took a lot of pleasure telling you a bit more about what we're doing at Motion Tag. And of course, if people are interested to learn more about Motion Tag, you'll see in some links with the podcast and with the video where you can, of course, reach out to us. I'm happy to discuss more in details what are sort of the needs. And thanks a lot for the opportunity, Tammy, for this. It's really a pleasure. And I think it kickstarts the year very nicely, at least for us, to speak about this topic and raise more awareness around what we're doing. So thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Oh, thank you very much. It gives me energy to hear more about business doing great things and move us toward the good direction. And Motion Tag is definitely doing something pioneering in the space. So thank you for sharing, and also a great start of the new year.
Thank you to you too. Thank you very much, everyone.
This is the 51st episode of Data for Future, and we'll see you next time.